Morning, Johnny. How are you
morning,
doing?
Steve.
Thank you for calling us. What happened to you? This is a few years ago.
It was in 2008. I worked for an ATM company. And five armed and masked men broke into our house. And then they proceeded to take my wife and my son to a house up in Belfast.
Now, just step through this with me, Johnny, and thank you so much for calling us today.
Not a problem.
So you're... Where were you when this happened?
In bed. The three of us were in bed sleeping.
So it was the middle of the night?
It wasn't. It was about 20 to 3 in the morning.
What did you hear?
Absolutely nothing until they were in the bedroom.
And you woke up and you saw what?
Five men with sawn-off shotguns and pistols with balaclavas in the bedroom.
My God. Hmm. And what did they do?
Well, they separated myself and my wife. Basically, they were questioning us because they were adamant that I was working that night.
So they trailed you out of bed?
No, they kept me in bed. They basically took my wife and my son out of the room.
How
and then the two of them, one on each side of me with pistols.
How old was your son?
He was 4 at the time.
Oh,
he's also autistic.
So they take them out of the room. You don't know where they are. You don't know if they're okay or not. And they keep you in bed, and they do what? What do they say to you?
Well, basically, I was being verbally abused and hit in the back of the head with a pistol. And I was told, on no uncertain terms, that a pistol was cocked and a bullet was handed to me. And I was told that if I didn't do what I was told, that the next two bullets were for my son and my wife. So basically, it was a case of no choice but to do as I was told, because... Obviously, I love my family.
The sense of fear. Well, it must be beyond fear.
To be honest with you, Stephen, to look at me, you would think, oh, he'd be able to handle himself, but I turned into basically a three-year-old. I was sobbing, just worrying about my family.
Well, five men standing above you. With sawn-off shotguns, I can imagine. Jesus. And what did they tell you to do?
Well, I had to go to work and I had to get the money and leave it in a specific place at a specific time. And it was basically just to remain at work until I got a phone call to say that my wife and my son was okay. But they were not released. It was about 7 o'clock at night and it was basically my son... A four-year-old autistic son took my wife by the hand and seen that the front door was open in the house. And he basically turned around and says to his mum, come on, mum, let's go. And they escaped themselves.
What do you mean escaped? Were they not tied up?
No, they were. It was a derelict house. I don't want to give the actual location in Belfast, but it was a unused property in Belfast. And what happened there was my wife and my son were kept in a room and they had like a person sitting outside the room so they couldn't escape and they had another one at the bottom of the stairs. But obviously they'd left, they'd heard that the money had been picked up, so they had left the house, but obviously they weren't going to tell them, look, we're away here.
And when you were driving to work, you didn't know if these people were following you?
They told me that they were going to be following me.
What's going through your head as you're driving to work to get the money?
To be honest with you, Stephen, there was absolutely nothing. I was complete blank. I was worried about my family and that was it.
Yeah.
There was nothing. I didn't really... Getting the money side of thing didn't bother me. It was just I had this bullet in my hand and I was told that there was two from my wife and my son that if I didn't do what I was told.
And they had actually put it into your hand?
They cocked the pistol in front of me. It dropped onto my bed. They told me to pick it up. And they said, the next two is for your wife and son. Because the original plan that they were saying, there was a camera down the stairs and they were going to take photographs for me to take to work.
Photographs,
but the man says, give him a bullet instead.
Photographs of what?
Photographs of the kidnappers with my family.
And did you get the money?
The they got 85,000. So they did that, and I didn't really care if it had been down to me. They would have got a whole van, as long as I got my family back.
Yeah.
But the main point is, we were victims there, but we're still now being treated like victims. The criminals are getting more than the victims are now, which is absolutely disgusting.
Just let me finish that part of that story with you.
Yep.
So you get the money. Mm-hmm. You had to pack the cash into bags or what?
There's standard operational procedures that banks are not willing to risk people's lives, obviously. So they would have contingency money set aside for things like this. It wasn't actually money that was for anything specific, but tiger kidnappings. So they have a certain amount of money that they would have at the side that they...
Probably better we don't go into that, actually. Yeah. Let's not give that detail away. And so you brought it and you had to leave it at a location?
Yes, right beside work. At a specific location.
And drive where?
100 metres away from the base.
And yeah, but then where did you go after that?
Back to work. I had to sit there. I basically was in work from 6 o'clock. The place didn't open at 7, but I was there from 6 because I needed to get out of the house. So I told them that I was working at this specific time when I wasn't, till I got the phone call to say, which it wasn't a very nice phone call because I was told that my wife and my son were being held at the rape crisis centre. So obviously that was another worry in my head.
That's what they said to you?
That's what the police said to me.
Right.
That they were being held in the rape crisis centre. So automatically I'm assuming the worst. But obviously nothing like that did happen. But that was I was about 14 and a half, maybe 15 hours that they were taken away.
And then you find out that your wife is okay.
Yes.
And your son's okay.
Mm-hmm. I still wasn't allowed to see them. I was treated like it was my fault. It was me that done it. I was not allowed to physically see my family for about another 2.5 hours, even though they were only 2 doors down from me.
Really?
Yep. While the police interviewed me.
What kind of things did they ask you?
It was like the old good cop, bad cop. One of them was really nice to me and one of them was just asking me... It's hard to explain, but basically what they were saying was it you that done it? And all I wanted to do was see my wife and son. And I could hear my son playing 2 doors down and I still was not allowed to go and see him.
And when you asked the police to see your son, what did they say?
Basically, as soon as the interview's finished, you'll be able to be with your family again. I can understand that they have to rule me out and all that stuff, but it's sort of common sense. I would love to see my family. Especially through what they have went through and what I had went through.
Tell me this, Johnny. What type of long-term impact does an event like that have in your life?
Well, it's a post-traumatic stress disorder. There's a hell of a lot of things. I would still see it nightly.
What do you mean, see it? What do you mean?
The vision of the man in my room, it's ingrained in my head. So it's something that I would go through in a nightly thing. I've learned to live with it. But it's made me take a job, which I'm not normally used to doing. It's made me take a step back in my career. Because I'll never go into that line of work again. Which the financial impact as well has caused depression. It's an ongoing thing, and it's... I don't think the courts and all that stuff understand how bad it is for victims at all. I think mainly we're a statistic now. We're just sort of used as a benchmark for people.
So when have I asked you more... Because it's very, very rare that we get a story like yours. This is intriguing. It's interesting. It's fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very, very sad as well, obviously.
Yep.
Post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yep.
Can you tell me a little bit more about the impact on you psychologically? So you wake up in the middle of the night and you're reliving this most nights.
Yes. It's detachment fear. If I'm always in constant contact with my family, always. That's not necessarily a bad thing, but I can get to the point where it's ridiculous. You know, if they're away from any more than an hour, I would phone, where are you? How long are you going to be? I have depression and anxiety, a lot of anxiety, and the confidence, no, lack of confidence, which I used to be very, very confident. Used to be an outgoing person. We don't go out no more. We don't socialise no more. We have no friends anymore because the area that the people were from, that is where my wife grew up, and that's where all her friends were, and the friend circle. We just stopped all contact with him, just out of fear that it might have been something to do with him. And if it wasn't for the
are you getting the right? Are you getting the right? Are you offered then, when the police clear you?
Yep.
Are you offered the right help and support and psychological support?
We had to actually do that all ourselves. We done self-referral.
Well, there is victim support, isn't there?
There is, yes, there's victim support if you want, but it's more, it's hard to explain. It'll probably work for some people. It's not going to work for us because we don't want to go in there every week and relive it every single week and talk about it every single week.
But we offered counselling.
I don't believe it was, Stephen. Our counselling was all self-referral. We went to our doctors ourselves, and our doctor says that they couldn't refer us to this place. We had to refer ourselves. We had to phone and make our own appointment. I did see a psychiatrist, but as I say, it was absolutely useless because I didn't want to go in there every single week and talk about it because it made things 10 times worse. It did not help at all. I'm not sure if that was offered to me or my doctor sent me there, but it just didn't help.
Obviously, we're not going to mention any names, but no. Some people were prosecuted.
Two were prosecuted.
And found guilty.
They were found guilty of certain parts of it. Apparently, they were on the peripherals of it. So there was more than 5 people involved.
So the people that who actually came into your house, none of them have been caught?
Apparently not.
How do you feel about that?
Absolutely disgusted. Because the dogs in the streets know who done it. But as, you know, the police are stuck with, they have to be beyond reasonable doubt and all that stuff. But everyone knows who done it. And the time that the people got was ridiculous. One got 18 months and he was out in 6 because he had done time in remand. And another one that collected the money and had used the stolen car to collect the money and burnt out the stolen car to 2.5 years.
2.5 years?
Yes.
For being involved in a crime where they basically threatened to shoot your 4-year-old, your wife and you?
Yes.
2.5 years?
Yes.
And probably the sentence 2.5 years?
It was indeed, yeah.
So he was out in just over a year?
He would have been. He's probably out now. We just basically told the police we don't want to know. If they're out, we don't want to know. But we do know that one of them's definitely out because they live.
What kind of message do the court send when they give someone involved in that degree of crime 2.5 years?
Well, there's no risk that they're going to get bed and breakfast for 1.5 years and plenty of money when they come out.
Well, he probably got a share of 85,000. Was the money ever found?
I believe some of it was found, but not all of it. So there is still probably quite a substantial amount of money out there. But I doubt that it's there now.
Johnny, thank you so, so much.
Not a problem, Stephen.
For calling us today. Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye now.
Thank you.